Welcome to Box Box Box, the Aussie F1 podcast. In this week's special episode, we take an in-depth look at Australia's current Formula One superstar, Daniel Ricciardo. So join us for a few laughs, find us on both Twitter and Facebook, and remember to share the podcast with your mates. So strap yourself in, pour yourself a shoey of your favourite beverage, and enjoy the ride. Welcome to the 25th of March edition of Box Box Box, the Aussie F1 podcast. Here in the studio today, you've got myself, Izzy Reilly, and we've got
Daniel Ball.
Daniel Ball in the studio joining us. Now, this week's episode, we are missing our
third musketeer
or third
blind mouse, the third amigo,
the little pig. In all seriousness, we're missing our partner in crime, Michael Niccolo, today. He's got other commitments. So, yeah, let's talk about what we're going to do today, Daniel.
Well, we thought without Michael here being the F1 Ferrari fanatic that he is, the one-eyed Vettel supporter, we would do a little thing that Izzy and I are quite passionate about, our Aussie boy, Daniel Ricciardo.
We're going to do a special on Danny Rick, that's right, folks. And we have got some exciting stuff to talk about. We're going to run through his career to date. We're going to have a chat about the pluses, I guess the pros and cons of Daniel's driving style, you know, what he's really good at, what we think might need to work on in the future. And we'll start off right now. Let's have a chat about, you know, his junior career. Well, let's start off with where Daniel hails from, Perth, which is the capital city of Western Australia, here in the great land down under. Now, let's just hail back to this Wikipedia page for a little bit of little bit of history on Danny. So he was born on
the 1st of July, 1989.
Wow. How do you know that, mate? You didn't even have to look.
I read it earlier.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. So, yeah, he's what? That makes him.
He'll turn 30 this year.
That's right, mate. So he's built up a bit of a career here in Formula One, which we're all following avidly. And he started his racing career in karts as a junior.
Like most Formula One drivers, they all start off in karts and then sort of go into progressing to single-seaters, you know, the Formula Renaults, the Formula Twos, those sorts of things.
Did a bit of racing in Formula Ford and Formula BMW in Perth, by the looks of things, and what else? He got himself to Melbourne, racing at Sandown, which is a fairly famous racetrack here in Australia.
Yeah. The biggest problem with Australia is we don't have a lot of single seater action here. We've got our V8 supercars, our tin tops, as a lot of people call them.
The tin tops.
We've got our Bathurst 1000, which Daniel Ricciardo and Alonso have been talking about running in. I've heard some rumours the last couple of weeks.
Oh, that would be juicy. That would be so
that
cool.
Would be awesome to have Alonso and Ricciardo in the same car.
Man, I've never been to Bathurst, and if that happened, I would hobble with a broken leg to get there. It would be awesome.
What's the old saying? Dragging? Oh, no, I can't say that on the podcast.
You can, mate. I can just beep it out, but it's all good.
Dragging your balls through broken glass.
Wow. Okay. Hadn't heard that one before, mate. So, yeah. Well, okay. So, around about 2007, Daniel starts to really hit his stride. He's tested the waters in, you know, other formulas overseas. He's actually started to get some traction in Formula Renault, started racing in the Italian Championship, also
the Euro Cup Renault.
Yep, cool. And then I guess a significant boost to his stock was when in 2008 he came first in the championship for the Western European Formula Renault 2.0 2-litre championship, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty good.
He was up against some good stiff competition during that season.
Started to show, I think, his value as a single-seater driver.
Absolutely. In the Euro Cup that year, he also came second. So from there, 2009 is when I really started to, I think, take notice of Daniel. You know, saw him do quite well at Monaco. I think he might have won it in 2009 or 2010. But he also started to get some testing happening with Red Bull Racing.
That was, I think, his first real testing in a Formula One car. He did some testing, and I can't remember the name of the track that did it with Red Bull.
It was at Jerez in Spain in December 2009. It's part of the Young Drivers Program.
And I think he ended up being about a second faster than his nearest competitor on that track on that day.
Pretty.
So he really showed that he was capable of hopping to a top level car and showing what he was capable of.
Do you think that's where the honey badger started?
I think he's probably always had the honey badger in his head, I think.
Yeah.
It's a bit of Daniel Avocado, which is apparently his new nickname if you haven't been watching on social media.
Hashtag Daniel Avocado.
Daniel Avocado and Hamilton. Now, I don't know if you've seen that yet. Avocado and ham together.
Ah, yes.
There's been a couple of those. Sorry, I've seen a few
things. I saw that on Twitter, actually. Yeah, wow.
We digress, though. He showed his muster as a potential driver with a Red Bull team there, and it wasn't then until...
Well, 2011, he got a crack with HRT, Spaniel Racing Team.
And that was his first race was in the British Grand Prix.
That's right.
Now, he did retire from that race, if I remember correctly.
Yep. I think he was sort of replacing Lorraine Karthikeyan at HRT.
Yeah, I think he was.
And it was kind of in and out of that HRT outfit. It wasn't the best outfit. Let's not pull punches here.
They went into receivership at the end of that year.
Yeah.
So they were running out of money.
And Narain, I believe, he got the opportunity to race in front of the Indian crowds in India. Being an Indian driver, so Daniel stepped aside for him there. But HRT wanted to keep him there, and I believe the agreement was actually from Red Bull/Toro Rosso to have him there as like a bit of a training ground for the following season.
Which they quite often do with a lot of Formula One drivers. They put him into a back market car and just to see how they go. Because if they in a 19th, 20 position car and they get it into 15th, 16th, the driver's pretty good.
They're having a good crack, aren't they? So bring on 2012. This is when things start to really blossom. He's at Toro Rosso.
Given an opportunity in a better car.
Teammate in 2012 was John Eric Verne, otherwise affectionately known as Jeff. And Daniel had a good outing at the Aussie Grand Prix to start with. He came home at ninth. It was his first ever point scoring finish, scoring a couple of points. That was pretty cool. I actually remember that race. It was awesome to see two Aussies at the Grand Prix. Of course, Mark Webber being there as well. He had a few more point scoring finishes. I think he got four ninth place finishes and a couple of tenth places.
Yeah, and the rest of them were all in the sort of position between sort of 15 to 17, somewhere around there, back of the mid pack.
Yeah, his teammate did outscore him for the season. Jev scored 4 point scoring finishes compared to Daniel's 6 point scoring finishes, but Jev actually got 4 eighth places, which you get more points. So finished on 16 compared to Daniel's 10. So 2013, he continued with Toro Rosso, this time again with Jev, but this time significantly doing better than Jev.
Well, his best position that year was 7th spot.
He did it a couple of times as well.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't just a once off. He got up the top there.
7th in China and also 7th in Italy.
Yeah.
So he was starting to show his mettle.
And starting to move forward. And that's the end of that year is when Mark Webber retired.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk in the paddock and, throughout that season, a lot of discussion about whether it was going to be Jean-Eric moving on to the Red Bull works team or
Red Bull stable. They're not a works team at that stage. Not a works
team, but I guess you'd call it the
big team.
Big team. Or whether it was going to be Daniel. Mm. And I think Daniel's performance in 2013 actually, outperforming Jev and being more consistent, finishing more races and having high net total of points, he really stood out, nearly doubling what Jev managed in 2013. So he managed to win the contract for Red Bull, which was awesome.
Coming into 2014,
Wow, that was probably his most exciting year.
It was. It was. Yeah. He finished third overall that year. Absolutely smashed his competitor.
Oh, I wonder who that was.
I think it was Sebastian Vettel, wasn't it?
Do you mean the four-time world champion Sebastian Vettel?
I do mean that one.
Wow.
Smashed him.
So when you say smashed, like let's just run over these points tally. So Daniel scored 238 points. And how many did Sebastian get?
I think it was only like 167 because he finished like fifth in the championship.
Wow.
That must have hurt.
That must have hurt.
A lot.
A lot, yeah. It must have been like sitting on a cactus because Daniel actually got his first win for Red Bull that year as well. He scored three victories that season.
Canada, which was his first win.
Yep.
Spa. And Hungary, where his three big wins that season.
Yep.
Did he do a shoey in any of those races?
I don't think the shoey occurred until
that wasn't until later, was it?
I think it might have been the following year.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. So, yeah, I just remember that season thinking that, you know, Daniel's got this. You know, this is.
He's world championship material.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If he can beat Seb in a team where Seb has been so dominant over, you know, the other
4 years.
4 years and you know, better than Mark Webber, basically.
Yeah. But I sort of feel for Daniel that year because he's come from Toro Rosso. He's jumped into a team that's just finished four world titles back to back and all of a sudden –
Mercedes have suddenly switched their cars
and
have got this winning car in front of them.
So what do you think that's attributed, we should attribute that to? Do you think that should be attributed to a little bit of burnout, a little bit of fatigue on Red Bull's part and Seb's part? You know, maybe Seb was a little bit burnt out.
You'd probably be a little bit burnt out. You get to a point where once you've achieved, you set yourself all these goals and you achieve those goals and then you're looking for another goal to achieve and you – sometimes you just can't see the goal in front of you. Daniel's come into a new team with a, you know, four championship back to back. And he's like, I'm in this with a chance. And he's got this, you know, excitement about it.
Do you know what the most exciting part of that season was? Now, I actually went to the Australian Grand Prix, the most exciting thing that happened in the season because he obviously won some races. But for me personally, mate, I was actually at the Aussie Grand Prix that year with my brother.
Yeah.
So my brother and I went over for his birthday. His birthday's in March. And you wouldn't believe it, mate. You know, the first race in a Red Bull, first race of the hybrid era, he brings it home in second place. So he would have been the first Aussie to get on the podium since, I don't know.
I don't think there's ever been.
Alan Jones probably did it.
No, because I don't think we had an Australian Grand Prix back then.
Okay, yeah. Anyhow, it doesn't matter. That was so exciting. And
it was. It was fantastic. You know, I remember that race.
He was on the bloody podium, mate.
Kid come up, first race for a big team.
Yep.
Aussie boy, Aussie race, gets a podium.
What happened?
They had it removed.
Yeah, he got disqualified like an hour or two later after the podium.
Yeah. Gutting the entire Australian racing fraternity and watchers, including myself, I was gutted that had happened.
So it was a fuel flow issue or something like that. So basically used too much fuel throughout the race. I don't know how that would happen. I think it's pretty unforgivable given that, you know, how
strict the rules are and how it would have been a misinterpretation of the rules, I would have thought, or Red Bull trying to bend the rules slightly.
And got caught out, maybe.
Got caught out. And all the teams do it. All the teams push the envelope on their designs and their engineering to try and get the best results. And some of them, it's not the black and white, it's the grey areas that they play in. So that then probably leads us into the 2015 season. Sebastian Vettel has moved over to Ferrari. And young Daniel Kvyat, the young Russian, steps into place alongside Daniel. So it's Daniel and Daniel, essentially, at Red Bull Racing. Must have been very confusing. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Danny.
Hey.
So, yeah, you had one half the garage, Daniil, and the other half the garage, Daniel. Danny. But essentially, they're both Daniels, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, for our Dan Ricciardo, the Renault engine wasn't doing well that season for Red Bull. Daniel finished sixth in his home Grand Prix. He had a string of points finishing races and then kind of petered out for much of the season. He had two podiums. One was in a third place in Hungary. He seems to love that track. And he also had a second place in Singapore.
I mean, he was actually beaten by Kvyat. That season, only just by 3 points.
Splitting hairs, mate.
So I think that's pretty even.
Yeah. Look, when you look at the results, though, he had two podiums compared to Kvyat's one. I'd call that a dead heat, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 points is not enough to sit there and say one driver's better than the other. The goal is always in Formula One is to beat your
teammate.
The teammate, the guy sitting in the car next to you.
Exactly.
You got the same machine, you got the same equipment, you got the same engineers. That's driver against driver. That's not equipment against equipment.
Moving on to 2016. Daniel is now, he's got a big challenge. And
he's got a young up and comer.
He's got a young up and comer. Now, this is an interesting season, Daniel, because our Daniel started the season with one teammate.
And a few races later, had another teammate. So that's, it was right, after Sochi, or the Russian Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm. So after four races.
Yeah, four races into the season. At Sochi, Kvyat pulled a move on, I think it was Vettel, if I remember correctly, in the first lap. It was deemed not appropriate from Red Bull. I'm guessing, you know, Vettel's old team, old stables has sort of said, you can't do that. And they've demoted him.
He's been demoted. And he's gone down to the junior team, Toro Rosso.
Back to Toro Rosso.
And who's come up? Max Verstappen.
The new young gun. And he was at a very young age. He was only 17 or 18 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the youngest Formula One drivers to come up to a big major team.
It was scary, actually, mate, to see how well Max Verstappen, you know, seamlessly transitioned into that Red Bull car.
Yeah.
He won the next race, mate.
Yeah. First race that he drives Red Bull, he comes out, wins the race.
Yeah, that's when, for me, I started to worry about Daniel, not only his position in the team there, but I thought, if you know, what's that going to do for his headspace? Like, he'd had a not bad start to the season in 2016. Fourth in Australia, fourth in Bahrain, fourth in China. He didn't retire in Russia. He came 11th. But then come Spain, he's come fourth, missed the podium completely, and Max has got the victory there.
Has trumped him.
I can't remember the circumstances there, but, mate, like that would have done my head in.
Well, having a young upcoming driver, 17, I'm pretty sure he was 17 when he came in. For some reason, I've got a funny feeling he could drive a Formula One car, but he couldn't drive a road car.
Yeah, that sounds familiar, doesn't it?
I vaguely remember that conversation.
Yep.
And you can imagine having someone that age come up behind you and just tromping you. It would have just really damaged your headspace, as you said, affected your confidence, similar to what he did to Vettel just 2 years earlier.
Wasn't a complete write-off for Daniel, though. He did finish third in the championship. So there was a victory in Malaysia, which was it's always tough to win in Malaysia. It's always, you know, hot and humid, and that Sepang track, it's not an easy track to win at.
And admittedly, that was the season of the Mercedes whitewash. I mean, it was Nico Rosberg or Lewis Hamilton that won races that year. No one else.
The other thing is that Sepang track, where you've got that really long straight at the start and at the end, you know, you need horsepower really at that circuit. And for Daniel to snatch a victory at that circuit, that was no mean feat.
Yeah.
But consistency ruled for Daniel there. He had a string of second place finishes. He finished second in Germany, Belgium, Singapore, and also Monaco, which seems to be like kind of his pet track, doesn't it?
He loves those tight, windy, you know, low speed circuits.
Low speed,
they
seem
to be his favorite.
He loves, a la Monaco, Canada, Singapore, Hungary. Yeah, they're the ones that he really seems to enjoy. So from there, he moved or he stayed with Red Bull, obviously, for 2017. 2017, first full season with Max Verstappen as his stablemate.
Teammate, yep.
He finished fifth in the championship, to Max being sixth in the championship.
And showed him beating by about almost 40 points. I think it was about 32 points in the end that he beat Max that by.
Pretty consistent, mate. He had lots of third positions. He did have one victory in Azerbaijan.
Still remember that race. That was a fact. That was a race of carnage.
Was that the first Azerbaijan Grand Prix?
Azerbaijan.
Yeah, that was a wicked race. I really enjoyed that race, and I think I will continue to enjoy that race. Max had a couple of victories late in the season once again. At Malaysia, at Sepang, the Red Bull won that race 2 years in a row, which is pretty crazy when you think about it. And also Max won at Mexico. The thing that sticks out for me looking at the season results there, mate, I'm not sure what you think, but you look at the last four races of the season.
And Daniel retired at three out of those four.
That's right.
Excluding Mexico, I think he didn't retire in.
Yeah,
Brazil. He finished in Brazil, but didn't finish in.
He didn't finish in Japan, the USA, or Abu Dhabi. That car sucked it for him. Like, he had a really bad car. That last sort of, string of failures and retirements.
I remember Max having the same issue at the beginning of the year. He had lots of retirements, and I remember that season they were questioning whether it was Max's driving style that was doing his engineering and those sorts of things.
Do you reckon they actually put Mark Webber's engine in Verstappen's car for the first half of the season and then they thought, no, we got this wrong. Let's put Webber's engine in Daniel's car.
Yeah, that's for the 2018 season.
Yeah, we'll just start it from like around about race. Let's just start it from USA onwards.
Do you need your R4 hat?
Yeah, man. The R4 hats are great. They keep away like all of the aliens and everything. Yeah.
Totally, so the government can't read your mind.
That's it, man.
Look, there's lots of discussions about conspiracy theories that Red Bull deliberately sabotaged the Australian drivers with Mark Webber and Daniel Ricciardo. I still don't understand why people think that.
I'm pretty sure that Helmut Marko has said on a number of occasions things that would suggest that they are going to favour the other drivers being Seb and Max. I don't have any quotes up. This is probably going to get me some backlash on Twitter or on Facebook. But look, hey, we want to hear that as well. Bring it, guys. Like, we want to hear you. If you want to bag us out, just bag us out. We really don't care. But
race teams want to win. They are interested in winning. They're looking so Christian Horner and Helmut Marko will be looking at the Constructors' Championship. They don't really care about the drivers as much as they care about the Constructors. It makes no sense to deliberately hobble one of your drivers because he's an Aussie, even though it looks like that every time we look at the race results.
Yeah, look, I think that comes from maybe being a little bit, Australians in Formula One, we are an underdog species, really. We're so far away from, continental Europe, which is the home base of Formula One. We don't
have the money and the investment into the single-seater series.
You know, where we should start a grassroots campaign, mate, to get one of the big mining companies from Australia to start a Formula One team. How about someone like Twiggy Forrest or someone like that? We need to get one of those
Twiggy
guys.
Twiggy
F1. That's got a good ring to it, mate.
That's actually.
What's his company? It's Fortescue. Fortescue Mining. Yeah. Fortescue F1.
That sounds a little bit pretty good, actually.
It doesn't sound too bad, does it?
It's better than Gina Reinhart Racing.
Oh, yeah. Now, I reckon that car would be slow to get around the track. for one reason or another. Just
probably,
saying.
Probably all the iron ore that's in it that's slowing it down. Because okay. They wouldn't build it out of carbon. It'd be like, oh, let's build it out of iron ore.
Oh, we've way digressed here. All right, so let's pull it back in. It's fun when it's just us two just about able to dribble BS a little bit, isn't it?
It is good fun.
So end of 2018, he's finished sixth, to Max finishing fourth in the championship. Daniel did pull out an amazing couple of victories, the first one being in China. You probably recall that one a little bit more than myself.
Yeah, 2018,
mate.
Yeah, yep. That overtake. That was when they had a safety car,
mm-hmm.
and then they Max and Daniel pitted for fresh tyres.
Yep.
And this is when Daniel got that name of being one of the best overtakers in the industry. He just came through. He big dives under brakes, just punched everyone out the way and just looked smooth and fast the whole way through. It was fantastic to watch.
Yeah, the victory for Daniel that season was at his pet race, I'm going to call it that, because he seems to own this track, man. It's probably the most glitzy, glamorous Formula One track in the world.
And that he missed out on that in 2016. And I think
that was an error from the team, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was leading that race and he's coming for a pit stop and there's no tyres.
Yep.
2018 is where he's changed.
Well, 2017 is that the one that you were talking about where with the no tyres?
No, it was 2016.
2016,
he didn't have tyres.
Okay, and so 2016. So I remember that's when he basically finished second and was so pissed off that he almost didn't want to be on the podium. He was absolutely fuming, wasn't he? Yeah. That was pretty unreal. And then to see that redemption in 2018, you could see the joy, you know, the big teeth coming out and, you know,
that smile of his.
Yeah,
that everyone loves to see.
And that was he celebrated with a big swan dive into the Red Bull pool on the yacht. Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
So he finished, when he came sixth in the championship, Max came fourth. Max was pretty consistent. He only had they had two wins each, but Daniel had a ton of retirements. He had a lot of trouble last year, didn't he?
Lots of retirement. But I think that came down to his headspace, because at the beginning of the 2018 season is when Max Verstappen got his contract re-signed.
That's right.
Really early on in the season. And he got a four-year contract signed, I think, Verstappen, four-year contract signed. Big money, more than what Daniel's on.
Yep.
All of a sudden, basically Red Bull said to Daniel, by doing that, you're a number two driver now.
Essentially, that's what it seemed like, and it's what it felt like as an observer. And I'm sure for Daniel, that would have struck home even more.
Yeah, and I think that's part and parcel of some of his decisions that he made later on in that year. I still remember when he got pole in Monaco.
Yep,
and he's jumping and he was really excited and felt really happy that he got that pole position.
I reckon that's that weekend. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he did a clean sweep. Like he finished all practice FP1, sessions.
FP2, FP3, top of the pops.
Yep.
Grand
Slam at Monaco. Basically.
Grand Slam at Monaco.
Yeah.
But I also remember when he got that pole position, he really crowed about it and Max Verstappen was
fuming. Yeah.
And didn't like the way Daniel had responded to that, I think that's if I remember rightly.
Yep. So it gets to the summer break, Dan, and our Dan is thinking, do I stick around at Red Bull for 2019?
And Christian Horner had promised him everything, given him on the contract, given him things that he wanted, a single year contract, the money that he wanted, equal status. But Red Bull at that stage were talking about switching to the Honda engine, and there were doubts over that Honda engine at that time.
Yeah. Daniel really wanted to take a long time to assess the 2018 season. He wanted to see how the Honda package was going at McLaren. Is it McLaren?
No, it wasn't McLaren. It was Toro Rosso.
Toro Rosso, sorry. Yeah, he wanted to see how that was ticking along. He also wanted to see, like you were saying, how the Renault engine fared. He made a bit of a massive call, really.
He did. A massive call. Some people are hoping that it's a Lewis Hamilton moment when Hamilton went from McLaren to Mercedes.
And not a Alonso moment.
Everyone's hoping it's not an Alonso moment.
Yep. So it still could go either way. This after we were only one race into the 2019 season. I'm not gonna like we were saying last week, mate. I don't think we can crystal ball too much here.
No, it's too early in the season. I think I said last week, Renault haven't said that they're a championship team. They haven't said they're a podium team this year.
No.
They're looking forward to 2020, 2021.
Let's compartmentalize what Daniel would have been thinking partway through the 2018 season, though. He's thinking, what are the pros of staying with Red Bull? You know that you're going to get decent money.
Familiarity with the teammates and all the rest of it. It's a good fit.
You've got a multiple championship winning race team, I guess. Like, you've got Adrian Newey as the chief technical director or whatever his role is.
Some kind of genius when it comes to aerodynamics and designing and building cars.
You've got Christian Horner, who's, whether you like Christian or not, he is an absolute guru at putting a Formula One team together. Well, any sports team, really, any racing team.
I think he's a good, strong leader for that team. He really shows, you know, I think he's tough but fair.
I think Christian is also, as you said, fair. That's the point I was going to make, mate. I think he's always tried to have parity for both drivers.
Which I, hand in heart, believe that's how Formula One teams must go forward, is equal status for drivers. Because I need my bottle of scotch.
Going back to equal standing for drivers, though, mate, do we feel that if he stayed with Red Bull, coming back to how Daniel was feeling, do you think he would have been level pegging with Max? Do you think?
No. Unfortunately, I think he had a little bit in his head. He came in as a Red Bull junior. He was always the kid within the team to start off with, and I think that's how he always felt. And he didn't feel like he could potentially progress to a number one without swapping teams. Now, that's maybe in his head compared to how other people viewed him. But sometimes when you're like that, and particularly after Azerbaijan in 2018, where that crash between teammates.
We forgot to talk about that, didn't we?
The big no-no.
Yeah.
I think that switched his brain quite hard, because I think a lot of people out there in the media and people that watched the race sat there and said that was not Ricciardo's accident.
Yeah.
That was purely 100% Max's fault.
Yeah. Yep. That was his up. I'm going to swear because I know I can beat the out of this now. Max, you f***ed up there, mate.
Jesus, that's a litany of swearing in that one.
Yep. Hey,
And the fact that Daniel got dragged over the coals for that as well. So that Christian Horner, and it's probably the unfairest thing, we talked about Christian Horner being fair. One of the unfairest things I think that they ever did was they dragged both of them over the coals for that one.
Yeah, yeah.
They were racing quite solidly. There were some good attempts by Daniel to overtake Max in that race and got it done on one lap, but then lost it during a pit stop when Max undercut him, I think, if I remember rightly, or overcut him.
Yeah.
Max, I believe when you're racing against other people against that are not in your team, you can fight pretty hard. But when you're fighting with someone in a position in your own team, you've got to have a little bit more leniency. You've got to sit there and go, I'm going to lift out a little bit earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
And Max did not do that in any of those overtaking attempts.
Yeah. Yeah. So we know that Daniel was going to be under pressure in 2019 against Max. He really probably put that pressure on himself. Let's now look at the positives that he would have been thinking about if he switches to another team. Well, let's actually talk about the possibilities of where he could have gone. So there was going to be a spot opening up at Ferrari. So the word was that Kimi Raikkonen, which we now know is true, was going to be shifted to another team.
Yep.
He's now driving for Alfa Romeo Ferrari, which is the Sauber team essentially. And there was also potentially going to be a spot opening up at Mercedes. And,
yeah.
and Daniel was really holding out. He really would have – either of those two teams would have been a great fit for Daniel.
And the Mercedes was, I think, a very small discussion. I don't think there was any serious opportunity for him there because yep. I think they had Esteban Ocon
lined up,
ready to take Valtteri's spot. And Valtteri wanting to keep his seat as well. The real spot was Ferrari.
Yeah.
Now, that puts him back together with his old teammate, Sebastian Vettel, that he smashed.
Smashed the out of.
Back in 2014 with Red Bull. So did Vettel then put a kibosh on that, or was that someone else further up the chain?
I reckon, personally, that Seb wouldn't have had the yay or nay say. Obviously, he would have had his input. My gut feel is that it's come from above him. Ferrari have said, nah, look, we don't think they're a good mix together.
Yeah.
We're happy with the way that Seb drives. We think he commands a great fan base and we're happy to stick with that.
Yeah. And bring a young up-and-coming driver into the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Who may be the next generation of Ferrari championship winner. You don't know. It's still early days. But so he had those options there, potentially. I can't remember which one closed out first, but it got towards the end of, the time where he was going to be able to make a decision, and it seemed like both those options had closed off and we were scratching our heads thinking, where's he going to go?
Yeah, and I think that's where Christian Horner was pretty sure that he was going to keep his one of his star drivers,
yep.
was keep with Red Bull, because his biggest fear was Ferrari and Mercedes. If they're not going to take him, where's he going to go?
Well, what were his options? His options were Renault, which we know that's where he ended up. If he wanted to go to Williams, he could have gone to Williams. If he wanted to go to McLaren, I've no doubt he could have gone to either any of those teams.
Well, at that stage, we knew Alonso was retiring, so McLaren were having some serious discussions with him, I believe, at the time.
He could have gone anywhere. And really, the only other option other than Red Bull that was going to be slightly competitive was Renault. But I don't think that was the way that Renault sold it to him. I think Renault sold it to him based on it being a long-term
plan.
Yeah.
And it's a two-year contract. And I think there's also 49 million other reasons why he was switched.
What's that, donuts? Or like, I wouldn't mind 40 million. 49 million donuts. Are you talking about those or?
No, 49 million coins, dollar coins.
Oh, geez, that'd be pretty cool. You'd need a pretty big piggy bank, wouldn't you?
That's a massive piggy bank that you need for that one.
Yeah. Well, okay. So he's made the move to Renault.
They've thrown a massive wad of cash at him, said, here's a bucket load of cash and let's have some fun.
Yep.
He's gone in there, as a development driver. For them to try and improve their car. He's a seven times
GP race winner.
GP winner. He's got pole positions. They know he can do the stuff.
And he's familiar with that engine. He's raced for Renault. You know, he's pretty well, apart from that HRT year.
Yeah.
He's had a Renault engine the whole time. I mean, I can't even remember if HRT had a Renault. Maybe they did, but so there's a bit of a stoush between you know, there's a lot of words exchanged between
Cyril and Christian Horner. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah, that's a touchy subject between the two of them.
I think, so a lot of people are saying that the fact that Renault paid Daniel so much that it was a FU to Red Bull Racing, who, you know, Red Bull weren't going to offer Daniel the same sort of monetary, reward. Yeah, it's pretty interesting the way that that's panned out.
Had Red Bull announced that they're switching to Honda by that stage or not?
I think they might have.
They might have. And then there's Daniel Ricciardo. Because I do vaguely remember a little comment that Christian made to Cyril about, you know, now you spend all your money on your drivers, can you spend anything on your cars now?
Yeah, that's it. So, look, that's pretty well where we're at. We've seen Daniel having a lot of pressure at the Aussie Grand Prix, him saying numerous times that he felt like he was trying to please everyone in Australia. It's a massive lead up to the first race of the season here in Australia.
I think he's sort of, excluding that first year, he's struggled in Australia. So to all the Australian fans, how about we lean off him a little bit leading up to the Australian Grand Prix, all the media attention, all the rest of it? I think next year he might be a little bit more aloof and not be as willing to help everyone out.
I hope he is, man, because, you know, like, it's such a intense sport. It's not like it is a team sport, but it's not like you're playing on a football field with, you know, 10 other guys or 17 other people. You know, you are in that car by yourself. You have to get your headspace correct. You also have to devote enough time to learn the track. You have to learn, you know, all of the apexes. You have
to learn the characteristics of your car.
Characteristics of your car. You have to learn the tires. Man, you have to study hard to become a top line F1 driver. It's not just you jump in the car and you drive it. And it might have been like that 20, 25 years ago, but it's not like that now. You actually have to know your And, you know, you have to be able to look at sector times and where you can pick up, you know, 10th here, 10th there. You know, it's and for him to have to go and have a chat with
various media and all the rest of it that are dragging him left, right and centre, wanting his attention so that they can sell their newspapers, their TV shows, because Daniel Ricciardo's on it.
Yeah, that's a massive lot of pressure.
A massive commitment for him, and he would be so drained by the end of a Melbourne Grand Prix weekend that it would be hard for him.
Tell you what he'd like to do, though. Like to pour himself a shoey, I reckon.
He would love to pour himself a shoey on the Melbourne podium, I reckon.
You know, we didn't actually talk about this, but let's discuss the shoey, the evolution of the shoey. So first instance that I know of was at the 2016 German Grand Prix. It's the act of pouring the champagne in your race boot, tipping it up and having a good old Aussie skull. Now,
skull.
So since then, it's become a bit of a tradition for Dan to do this. Whether he wins the race or whether he gets on the podium, he's known to do it.
I think after a while, he started saying that he's only going to do it on the podium because race win.
Yeah.
Sorry, not just on the podium.
Because you start to sort of
It loses
its luster and, yeah, so there's been some pretty high-profile people who have drank out of Daniel Ricciardo's shoe.
I don't know if I could do that.
A couple of people I can think of. I know that Mark Webber's drank out of his shoe.
Absolutely.
Jared Butler.
Martin Brundle. Then had about 3 weeks off being violently ill. I remember that.
Who else has drank out of his shoe? What's his name?
Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah. The Star Trek guy. There's a number of other people out there. You definitely want to check it out. They're pretty good celebrations. But that's the shoey in a nutshell.
Hopefully the Renault move has proved to be a good one for the future for him, and we hope to see more shoeys.
So we'll probably leave it there. For now, it's Izzy really signing off.
and Daniel Ball signing off.
We'll catch you next week after the Bahrain GP. Hope you've enjoyed this show about Daniel Ricciardo, and we've certainly enjoyed having a chat about it. And go Daniel.
And thanks for listening.
What else is there three of? Third Musketeer.
What else is there three of? There's three Musketeers. There's three Amigos. There's three Blind Mice. There's all sorts, mate. What are you talking about?
Blind Mouse.
Three Little Pigs.